Chapter 9. Police frightened him exceedingly. But he did not say that. He said, without turning round, in a muffled voice, "It's done." Again he heard Alden sigh. He walked to the table, sat down with the lamp before him, and only then looked towards the bed. In the distant corner of the large room far away from the lamp, which was small, and provided with a very thick china shade, Alden appeared like a dark and elongated shape rigid with the immobility of death. This body seemed to have less substance than its own phantom walked over by Razumov in the street white with snow. It was more alarming in its shadowy, persistent reality than the distinct but vanishing illusion. Alden was heard again. "You must have had a walk, such a walk," Dottie murmured deprecatingly. "Apostrophe this weather." "Dot," Razumov answered with energy, "horrible walk. Dot dot dot, a nightmare of a walk." He shuddered audibly. Alden sighed once more, then, "And so you have seen Zamyanich, brother?" "I've seen him." Razumov, remembering the time he had spent with the prince, thought it prudent to add, "I had to wait some time." "A character, eh? It's extraordinary what a sense of the necessity of freedom there is in that man. And he has sayings too simple, to the point, such as only the people can invent in their rough sagacity. A character that... dot, I, you understand, haven't had much opportunity." Dot dot, Razumov muttered through his teeth. Alden continued to stare at the ceiling. "You see, brother, I have been a good deal in that house of late. I used to take their books leaflets. Not a few of the poor people who live there can read. And, you see, the guests for the Feast of Freedom must be sought for in byways and hedges. The truth is, I have almost lived in that house of late. I slept sometimes in the stable. There is a stable. Dot, that's where I had my interview with Zamyanich," interrupted Razumov gently. A mocking spirit entered into him and he added, "It was satisfactory in a sense. I came away from it much relieved." "Ah. He's a fellow," went on Alden, talking slowly at the ceiling. "Came to know him in that way, you see. For some weeks now, ever since I resigned myself to do what had to be done, I tried to isolate myself. I gave up my rooms. What was the good of exposing a decent widow woman to the risk of being worried out of her mind by the police? I gave up seeing any of our comrades." Dot dot, Razumov drew to himself a half sheet of paper and began to trace lines on it with a pencil. "Upon my word," he thought angrily, "he seems to have thought of everybody's safety but mine." Alden was talking on. "This morning, this morning that was different. How can I explain to you? Before the deed was done I wandered at night, and lay hid in the day, thinking it out, and I felt restful. Sleepless but restful. What was there for me to torment myself about? But this morning after, then it was that I became restless. I could not have stopped in that big house full of misery. The miserable of this world can't give you peace. Then when that silly caretaker began to shout, I said to myself, there is a young man in this town head and shoulders above common prejudices. Apostrophe, is he laughing at me?" Dot Razumov asked himself, going on with his aimless drawing of triangles and squares. And suddenly he thought, colon, my behavior must appear to him strange. Should he take fright at my manner, and rush off somewhere I shall be undone completely. That infernal general. Dot dot, he dropped the pencil, and turned abruptly towards the bed with the shadowy figure extended full length on it, so much more indistinct than the one over whose breast he had walked without faltering. Was this too, a phantom? The silence had lasted a long time. "He is no longer here," was the thought against which Razumov struggled desperately, quite frightened at its absurdity. "He is already gone, and this... dot dot only... dot dot," he could resist no longer. He sprang to his feet, saying aloud, "I am intolerably anxious," and in a few headlong strides stood by the side of the bed. His hand fell lightly on Alden's shoulder, and directly he felt its reality he was beset by an insane temptation, to grip that exposed throat and squeeze the breath out of that body, lest it should escape his custody, leaving only a phantom behind. Halden did not stir a limb, but his overshadowed eyes moving a little gazed upwards at Razumov with wistful gratitude for this manifestation of feeling. Razumov turned away, and strode up and down the room. Tea would have been possibly a kindness, he muttered to himself, and was appalled by the nature of that apology for a murderous intention his mind had found somewhere within him. And all the same he could not give it up. He became lucid about it. What can he expect? He thought. He'll alter in the end. And one. Dot, this argument was interrupted by Halden's voice. Why be anxious for me? They can kill my body, but they cannot exile my soul from this world. I tell you what I believe in this world, so much that I cannot conceive eternity otherwise than as a very long life. That is perhaps the reason I am so ready to die. H'M, muttered Razumov, and biting his lower lip he continued to walk up and down and to carry on his strange argument. Yes, to a man in such a situation of course it would be an act of kindness. The question, however, was not how to be kind, but how to be firm. He was a slippery customer, I too, Viktor Viktorovich, believe in this world of ours, he said with force. To, while I live. ... But you seem determined to haunt it. You can't seriously. ... The voice of the motionless Halden began, haunt it. Truly, the oppressors of thought which quickens the world, the destroyers of souls which aspire to perfection of human dignity, they shall be haunted. As to the destroyers of my mere body, I have forgiven them beforehand. Razumov had stopped apparently to listen, but at the same time he was observing his own sensations. He was vexed with himself for attaching so much importance to what Halden said. The fellow's mad, he thought firmly, but this opinion did not mollify him towards Halden. It was a particularly impudent form of lunacy, and when it got loose in the sphere of public life of a country, it was obviously the duty of every good citizen. This train of thought broke off short there, and was succeeded by a paroxysm of silent hatred towards Halden, so intense that Razumov hastened to speak at random. Yes. Eternity, of course. I, too, can't very well represent it to myself. I imagine it, however, as something quiet and dull. There would be nothing unexpected, don't you see? The element of time would be wanting. He pulled out his watch and gazed at it. Halden turned over on his side and looked on intently. Razumov got frightened at this movement. A slippery customer, this fellow with a phantom. It was not midnight yet. He hastened on, and unfathomable mysteries. Can you conceive secret places in eternity? Impossible. Whereas life is full of them. There are secrets of birth, for instance. One carries them onto the grave. There is something comical. But never mind. And there are secret motives of conduct. A man's most open actions have a secret side to them. That is interesting and so unfathomable. For instance, a man goes out of a room for a walk. Nothing more trivial in appearance. And yet it may be momentous. He comes back, he has seen perhaps a drunken brute, taken particular notice of the snow on the ground, and behold he is no longer the same man. The most unlikely things have a secret power over one's thoughts, the gray whiskers of a particular person, the goggle eyes of another. Razumov's forehead was moist. He took a turn or two in the room, his head low and smiling to himself viciously. Have you ever reflected on the power of goggle eyes and gray whiskers? Excuse me. You seem to think I must be crazy to talk in this vein at such a time. But I am not talking lightly. I have seen instances. It has happened to me once, to be talking to a man whose fate was affected by physical facts of that kind. And the man did not know it. Of course, it was a case of conscience, but the material facts such as these brought about the solution. And you tell me, Viktor Viktorovich, not to be anxious. Why? I am responsible for you, Razumov almost shrieked. He avoided with difficulty a burst of Mephistophelian laughter. Halden, very pale, raised himself on his elbow. And the surprises of life, went on Razumov, after glancing at the other uneasily. Us consider their astonishing nature. A mysterious impulse induces you to come here. I don't say you have done wrong. Indeed, from a certain point of view you could not have done better. You might have gone to a man with affections and family ties. You have such ties yourself. As to me, you know I have been brought up in an educational institute, where they did not give us enough to eat. To talk of affection in such a connection you perceive yourself. As to ties, the only ties I have in the world are social. I must get acknowledged in some way, before I can act at all. I sit here working. And don't you think I am working for progress too? I've got to find my own ideas of the true way. Pardon me, continued Razumov, after drawing breath, and with a short, throaty laugh, but I haven't inherited a revolutionary inspiration together with a resemblance from an uncle. He looked again at his watch and noticed with sickening disgust that there were yet a good many minutes to midnight. He tore watch and chain off his waistcoat, and laid them on the table well in the circle of bright lamplight. Halden, reclining on his elbow, did not stir. Razumov was made uneasy by this attitude. Hat move as he meditating over so quietly, he thought. He must be prevented. I must keep on talking to him. He raised his voice. You are a son, a brother, a nephew, a cousin, I don't know what to know end of people. I am just a man. Here I stand before you. A man with a mind. Did it ever occur to you, how a man who had never heard a word of warm affection or praise in his life would think on matters on which you would think first with or against your class, your domestic tradition, your fireside prejudices? Did you ever consider how a man like that would feel? I have no domestic tradition. I have nothing to think against. My tradition is historical. What have I to look back to, but that national past from which you gentlemen want to wrench away your future? Am I to let my intelligence, my aspirations towards a better lot, be robbed of the only thing it has to go upon at the will of violent enthusiasts? You come from your province, but all this land is mine, or I have nothing. No doubt you shall be looked upon as a martyr someday, a sort of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.